The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to the She Word, conversations women rarely have but really should. I'm Sasha, your host for this edition of the Young Women's Edition, where we have conversations that continue giving young women the voice that they deserve. We finished season 2 with Young Women and Health, and we are kicking off season 3 with Young Women and Health part 2, because one part just wasn't enough for such an important discussion. There are so many women I continue to meet who have had to face struggles with their health and had no choice but to find the strength to overcome them. So more and more, I believe it's a topic that deserves all of the discussions in the world, and it's an important discussion for women of all ages. So without further ado, I'm joined here today by three incredible women who have all had their own experiences with health challenges, and some of these challenges can really only impact women. We've got Cheyenne Muscat, a 26-year-old dancer and graphic designer who has been living with thyroid cancer for the last 3 years. Carla Galia, a 19-year-old student who was recently diagnosed with endometriosis after years of chronic pain. And finally, Debbie Kakia, probably the oldest guest we've had on this edition, but for a very good reason. She's going to be sharing her experience with battling cancer when she was pregnant at 28 years old. Ladies, thank you all so much for being here today for such an important conversation. Now, could you all introduce yourselves a bit, perhaps mention anything that I haven't? Cheyenne, can you start us off?
Sure. I'm 26 years old. I have been a freelance graphic designer for the past almost 2 years now. I also started my journey during what I went through. It was a particular episode during my stay in hospital, so it's like more interesting. I'm also a dancer. I've been dancing since the age of 3. I also teach kids, and it's also a big passion of mine, so yeah.
Amazing. Carla?
I'm 19. I love to read and write and create as much as I can. I was also a dancer from ages 2 to 18. And I also teach kids. I teach kids dance, and now I work in a summer school. And yeah, I hope to be a journalist or a writer one day.
Super. And finally, Debbie.
I'm 37, as you said, probably one of the oldest people you've had on the show. I am a mother. I'm originally from Gozo. I am passionate about entrepreneurship and about personal development. And I'm very excited to be here today to share my story.
Amazing. I'm really excited to have you all here. I mean, I am in awe of all of you. I have to say, Cheyenne was actually the reason why I wanted to do a part 2, because as I told you, I came across your story on social media and I just wanted to have you on a show.
So
thank you for inspiring this. So before we start going into our experiences, I just want to start us off with some statistics. So cancer rates among young women in Europe are rising, particularly for breast, thyroid and colorectal cancers, and have risen considerably throughout the last decades. Endometriosis affects about 1 in 10 women of reproductive age globally, often leading to chronic pain and fertility issues. And despite its prevalence, it often goes undiagnosed for years, particularly in young women. Approximately 20 to 25% of young women report experiencing chronic pain, which is higher than the prevalence in young men. And chronic pain, particularly among young women, is frequently misdiagnosed or undiagnosed, leading to prolonged suffering and inadequate treatment. Many women report that their pain is underdiagnosed or inadequately treated. Now, coming back to these women here in front of me, do you have any reactions to these statistics? Is there something that you'd like to say about them?
I feel like I really relate to how long it takes to get diagnosed. On paper, I'm one of the lucky ones. I got diagnosed after 5 years. It takes women 8 to 15 years to get an endometriosis diagnosis, which is unacceptable. It's just underfunded, under-researched, and I just don't think we're taken seriously in general.
Yeah.
In my case, I, as you said, I had thyroid cancer when I was pregnant, but I was only diagnosed after I had my son. So before I actually became pregnant, I had never even been to a hospital. I didn't even know how a hospital looked like. Mm. But then after, obviously during my pregnancy, I had regular visits and then also afterwards. But it took 3 months after my son was born for me to be diagnosed with thyroid cancer, and I actually self-diagnosed. So I managed to find the lump myself. And I think it's very important to create awareness both amongst females and women about their hormones and how their body changes, to be able to know yourself and know the differences. But also it's good to create awareness about, you know, these changes that women go through, and even when you're seeing a health practitioner, to for them to look at you as an individual, as a human being, and to really see beyond, you know, perhaps mainstream diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think cancer is like very common in anyone in particular, but the ones you mentioned, like thyroid, ovarian cancer, those are like the most impactful on us women. And me taking it back to 23, being just 23, and they told me, like, you have thyroid cancer, it's like, I mean, it's a shock because you're still quite young, you're just starting your life, and, you know, you have so much to look forward to, and you're like, what's going to happen now? So mm-hmm. it's quite shocking, you know?
Mm-hmm. So on that, I mean, I am literally in awe of you. Like, you have had cancer throughout the last 3 years of your life. This must not have been easy at all. Moment you found out to now, like, what was it like? What has it been like?
So basically, just to take you a bit through it, I got diagnosed at the age of 23. It was a coincidence because I went to check at an ENT doctor just because I had normal like allergies and whatsoever. And I had taken my mom with me. I take my mom everywhere with me. she's my greatest supporter and whatever. So yes, I took her with me. She told me, like, explain to the doctor that sometimes your neck is swollen. And I was like, okay, let me tell him. And he was checking my neck and he felt this lump. And he said immediately, it's quite big. You need to, like, check it out. He sent me for an ultrasound. He told me that the ultrasound is not enough. They did the biopsy for me, and it actually resulted in being thyroid cancer. The first thing that they actually tell you, it's like, okay, you have thyroid cancer. I don't remember. I cannot recall what happened after, like, that comment, because I do remember that I was going to faint. But other than that, I don't remember what happened. All I remember is my mom had told the doctor, okay, so what's the next step? What are we going to do now? Then I went for surgery. I spent a week in hospital because I had two drains attached to me and the blood didn't want to stop. Calcium levels were very bad. So obviously they couldn't send me home. Then I went home. They called me back because I needed to do the treatment. I went in for the treatment, and for that, like, time, they were like, okay, we're just going to check up on you and you're doing fine. I was like, okay, we're heading into, like, the right direction. And I was very, like, positive about it. Then the following year, so, and that was during COVID as well. So I had to, like, go through COVID restrictions and actually, like, go through the cancer thing. Then the following year, I went for my ultrasound, and they actually ordered another ultrasound, and we immediately thought, okay, there's something wrong. Then after that ultrasound, obviously the oncologist spoke to me, and the surgeon as well, the first surgeon, came with her to the appointment, and we knew something was wrong. And they told me, listen, there are some traces in your neck that we have seen during the ultrasound. And we have also discovered during the PET scan that there are some traces in your lungs. Obviously, that's another huge shock. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do. I just saw my mom crying her eyes out next to me. And actually at that moment in time, I was like really calm. I knew what was happening, but I didn't accept it at that time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot to accept.
Exactly. Then they were like, let's try to actually go through another treatment and we'll see from there. I did the treatment and unfortunately it wasn't reactive to the traces. So the oncologist spoke to me again and she told me, listen, let's apply for another set of treatment. So obviously I had to ask for help to get like chemo tablets. Thankfully, they did another PET scan and like they told me to not start them for that period of time. And until since then, like I haven't taken the chemo tablets because I have been stable since then. So yeah.
Wow. Wow. So how did you process your diagnosis when you first learned about it?
It wasn't easy, obviously. I mean, I spent like a day or two in bed. I didn't want to get out of bed. I thought that my life was over. You know, at the age of 23, it's like, I mean, your life is just starting. So, yes, it wasn't easy. But then I was like, okay, this is happening. I have to accept it. I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to fight through it. And yes, so that's how actually I made peace with myself. That's, listen, you have to accept this and you have to fight through this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes we just don't have the choice but to exactly. Like, be strong, you know. And it can actually be a bit annoying to hear like, oh, stay strong, you know.
Exactly, yes.
When that is really the only thing you can have to do. Yeah, like you don't have any choice, you know.
Keep your self-care journey on track in just a few clicks with Myoka Spas. Whether for a moment of disconnection, a complete body-mind reset, or a bonding time together, book online stress-free at myoka.com or use the new Myoka app. Complimentary spa facilities on every visit.
How would you say it's impacted your life over the last 3 years?
I mean, now I can look at it as a positive thing because since then I have become the woman I am today. Mm-hmm. I'm very much more stronger than I used to be. I used to hate going to the hospital. I still do, but I mean, because it's not a nice thing. But yeah. Now I look at it in a different like aspect. So yes, I mean, obviously, we were during COVID when I did my surgery, so I had to stop dancing as well. So that was also a big thing for me. So yes, until I actually started again, you know, like gaining your breathing back, and mm-hmm. Yes, it wasn't easy. It was a bit of a hurdle.
I had a similar experience in a way, in the sense that I also take a lot of positives from the whole situation. Obviously, at first when I realized what was wrong, or when I thought there was something wrong, I didn't know the extent of it. So there was a time lag of around 1 to 2 weeks where I didn't know how serious it was. I knew it was something serious, but I was waiting for the results. And I think that was the most difficult part for me because you don't really know where your life is heading. I had a really small child. He was only 3 months old. So, you know, at the time I wasn't even sure whether I would even be able to make it to his first birthday. So to me, that was the biggest probably trauma. I remember the first few days I couldn't even look at him, you know, because I was so taken aback by the whole situation. But then at the same time, that period also provided me with the opportunity to really reflect on my life. And I realized I was very happy with what I had done by that time. Obviously, the future is something nobody really has control over. But I was really happy with what I had done by that time, I had my son, I had a family, I had studied, I had traveled, I had achieved many of the things I wanted to achieve by that age. So in a way, it was also a positive experience to be able to acknowledge and make peace with what I had done in my life up until that point. And then I remember after I got the diagnosis and I realized it was still relatively early stages and it took me through the process of what I would be going through, etc. I remember just waking up one day, I mean, after crying myself to bed for like a week, I just remember waking up and I was like, okay, this is it. You know, we get on with it. Whatever they tell me to do, I will do. But that's all I can do. And I just decided to keep on living my life. And since then, in reality, I have tried to cherish every moment of my life. And probably because of this experience, I have also been able to push myself to do more and not to procrastinate and to really focus on what I want to achieve. And I'm not saying it's easy, but you know, life is not easy. So there will always be challenges to go through. And I think on balance, this was, yes, a negative experience, but I do take a lot of positives from it. And I didn't really have like really big meltdowns or really big issues, but I did go see a psychologist. I remember I did an appointment because I felt fine, but I didn't want to take my mental health for granted. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also very important to be aware and to just get that professional opinion, you know, someone reassuring you, telling you that that they feel you're okay, or on the other hand, if you need some help, to be able to get some help. Mm-hmm. I think when it's something so traumatic and when you're so young, it's not just a trauma for you, it's a trauma for everyone around you, you know? Absolutely. People around you don't even know how to react. Your loved ones, your family, they don't even know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. And from my experience, I feel it's even worse when it's on someone you love. So I empathize with family members and relatives, because it's not easy to be able to support someone when they're in such a traumatic situation. And yeah, so I think, you know, heads up to everyone, not just the patients, but also all of the family members that are around us.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. When I was going through my own health challenges, it was so hard on, for example, my mom and my grandmother. And actually, like my grandma, she was crying every single day for weeks. So that's a really good point that you make there. But I actually also want to take it back a bit as well. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you find out? How did you react to finding out? I mean, you had just given birth.
Indeed. So I had literally just given birth. My son was only almost 3 months old. I was obviously very exhausted. I wasn't sleeping at all. My son was crying day and night. So I was very busy, obviously, taking care of him. And as all moms probably will relate to, you kind of don't really take care of yourself. You mm-hmm. just focus on taking care of the child. And that's what I did. And my son was crying all the time. So I realized there was something wrong with him as well. And after a while, I went to the pediatrician and he told me he's not feeding enough. At the time, I was breastfeeding only. And the pediatrician told me, you know, if he continues to cry, just give him formula. And I feel like at the time, I didn't really have a lot of support from my support system. Everyone told me, you know, you don't really know how much he's feeding, you know, you don't really get to gauge, and he's growing and he's fine. But I did feel there was something wrong. And I think as women, you know, our instincts are so strong. And I would tell everyone, trust your instincts. So anyway, we went to the pediatrician. He gave me this advice and that's what I did. And I remember after 3 months, it was the first week that I actually slept. I managed to sleep a little bit because he was feeding enough, so he was resting more. And I had the opportunity to rest myself. And I remember at the time, my son's father was feeding him, and I thought to myself, let me just have, you know, a calm bath, because I love baths, and I wasn't able to have a bath during the pregnancy and then afterwards because I was so busy. And I remember I put a face mask on and I was so happy. It was a Friday night and I was finally taking care of myself. And I get out of the bath and I was taking the mask off and putting some moisturizer on, and I felt a lump on my neck. And it was very a strange feeling. I had never felt like that before. And I remember I got concerned and I called my father-in-law at the time, and I told, because he's a doctor, and I said, listen, I feel like I have a lump and I'm worrying about it. And he said, let me come and check. Let me come to reassure you. And he came over. It was 8 o'clock at night. And he checked it and he immediately said, it's the thyroid, you know, we need to get it checked. And I knew by the look on his face that he knew it was going to be something serious. And that's when obviously then the whole process started. Then we went for ultrasounds, we did a biopsy, we got the results, and then I had the surgery done, which was again very traumatizing. The first time I left my son, I had to be away from him for a whole week because I was always mm-hmm. also at the hospital for like a whole week. My calcium levels were really low. Yeah, so that was in itself a very traumatizing. I remember the first time I went to, and then I went to the oncologist. And the first time I went by myself. And I remember I walked from Mater Dei to the oncology center and I felt the stigma walking through the oncology hospital. I had never been inside. I didn't even know what it looked like. And I felt the stigma. Everyone there was much older than me. I remember being in the waiting area and everyone was so much older. And I felt like really judged. And that was in itself a learning experience. I remember I went in, the oncologist said, did you come alone? And I was like, yes, because my husband is taking care of my son and someone needs to be with my son. And, you know, but yes, that's when he gave me a whole list of things I had to do before the treatment. So then I realized, okay, now I really need to put my effort in this. And I had to diet before I took the treatment. And then I took the treatment. And I remember my treatment was just one dose. So I spent one night at the oncology hospital. And at the time, my family and I, we lived right across the road from the hospital. And I remember in the evening looking outside of the window and wondering what my son was doing. And, you know, I was so close and yet so far away. And that in itself was also a learning experience, a very emotionally charged learning experience. Yeah, so that was my journey. But at the same time, it was also a learning experience. And now when I go to the oncology hospital, because I have checkups once, follow-up checkups once a year, I always make it a point to look my best. I go into the hospital and I'm dressed as if I'm going to an event. I make an effort to look really nice because I really want people to understand that there can be a way out. You can feel better about myself. I feel better about myself now more than I did before I had cancer. So there is hope. There is a chance of getting better. There is a chance of feeling better about yourself. And in fact, when I walk in, many people think I'm a doctor, and then all of a sudden when they hear my name, they realize I'm actually a patient. But I do it on purpose because I want to show them that it's obvious that you're going to feel down and you're going to feel like you're sick, that your body is letting you down. But at the same time, it's also an opportunity for you to see the silver lining and to see the end of the tunnel. And that's what I want to instill in the people that I meet.
Well, that's really beautiful. And I will continue asking you more things about all that you just said. But Carla, we have barely heard anything from you. So as we've already heard, endometriosis is commonly misunderstood or misdiagnosed. It took you 5 years to get a diagnosis and you're still only 19. Yeah. You're probably one of the youngest people that we've had on the show.
One of the youngest people to get diagnosed.
Exactly.
Also, it's not usually diagnosed so early. I got my period very young. I was 11. And from the beginning, I just had bad periods. And I grew 12, 13. Still, they're really bad. They're getting worse. And, you know, the attitude was, she's one of the unlucky ones, you know. She cramps a lot. She gets sick. And then around 15, I started to faint on my period. I started to look really sick throughout the whole month. Like I was really pale, almost gray, bad tummy pain, constipation, GI issues. It was just a lot of stuff that started to like leak out of the period week. And it was affecting me throughout the entire month. And I told my mom, you know, something's wrong and I want to go get help. And she took me to see a gynecologist. And I told him my symptoms. I told him what I was feeling. And this is the first time at 15 that I heard the word endometriosis. He said, oh, there's this thing called endometriosis. You might have it. Let's just put you on the pill and see what happens. Didn't explain to me what it was. Didn't tell me anything. So I was just like, okay, let me just take the pill. It helped. I was on it for 2 years. And at 17, I made the decision to get off it because I said, you know, I don't know my adult body without the pill. And I really want to see how I feel off it. And I was also having some mental health struggles at the time. And I had heard that the pill can give you like depression and anxiety. So I wanted to see if that was the source. And I made the choice to get off. And I was off it for a while then. And it just got so bad. The second I got off the pill, it was like on my period, I would just lay in the shower with like hot water, crying, screaming in pain. It was just the most horrible pain I think I've ever experienced in my life. Every single cycle. And eventually it started happening every day. I'd wake up in pain, go to sleep in pain. It was just something was wrong. And I went to see my gynecologist. She told me, okay, let's get you back on the pill. Got back on the pill, a different pill to the first time. It was working okay. I went through a bit of a stressful period in my life and I had started back up into uni. And I'm in a lecture one day and I leave the lecture and I'm with my friends, we're talking and I'm like cramping and I'm like, oh shit, it's starting. Like I'm gonna get my period, you know? So I was just getting mentally prepared for it. And all of a sudden I just get this shooting pain from my abdomen all the way down my legs and into my back. And I said, no, this is wrong. This is really wrong. And I'm telling my friends, guys, I need to sit down. I'm getting dizzy. I'm feeling really sick. My heart was racing. I had my gynecologist on speed dial. Like that's how bad it was. So I texted her and I told her, hey, like, you know, I'm very close to hospital because I'm at uni. Should I go? And she told me, yes, go. So I went, I got triaged and I presented so severely that I got seen really quickly because I had a heart rate of 140. I was in so much pain and I was like crying. I had to unbutton my jeans because my abdomen became so distended and so bloated that my jeans just didn't fit anymore. And this happened in like 15, 20 minutes.
Wow.
So my mom arrived and I'm there and I'm waiting and I get seen by this ER doctor and he told me, you know what, like we did some blood, everything looks okay, go home, have a Nurofen, put a hot water bottle on your tummy, take a nap, you're gonna feel better. And I was like, huh? I was really just like in shock because he didn't even take a pregnancy test, didn't check my infection markers, which, you know, if you rupture the cyst or you have an ectopic pregnancy, that's how you find out. So I went home. Someone like very close to me is a doctor and he told me, keep an eye on her blood pressure. Keep talking to me, tell me what if you improve or get worse. And I got home from the hospital still in so much pain. They had given me IV Panadol, which helped a little bit. And I decided to call my gynecologist and I told her, I need to see you, like something's wrong. And I just, don't put me on the pill to shut me off. I just really need to figure out what's wrong. And I was still taking the pill at this point, but I just wasn't working out. She had an emergency appointment and she told me, you know what, this looks like endometriosis. I'm going to refer you to the endometriosis clinic.
But like my question here is, and it's not even really directed at you, one, how do you not order an ultrasound when a young woman comes in presenting such symptoms? And two, why does it not come to their minds to send you to the endometriosis clinic?
Yeah, immediately. So I had to get this referral privately, and I'm very lucky to be able to afford private care because if I didn't, I would not have got this referral. So I got referred to the clinic. I got seen by a specialist, and she said, "Yeah, everything you're saying is pointing to endo. How did no one catch this?" Like, and I said, I don't know. You know better than I do. I got an MRI done. Last February is when I got the official stamp of, yeah, you have endo. It's still a process. I'm still being seen every 6 months to a year at hospital. And I'm still trying to decide if I want the surgery because that's kind of a decision you have to make on your own, the laparoscopic surgery. They warn you that it can offer temporary relief and you might just get sick again. So, you know, it's a choice you have to make and I'm just not sure whether I want it yet. But that's where we're at right now.
I mean, all of this is quite difficult to navigate at a young age.
Yeah, and it comes with a lot of grief and changing feelings. I remember when I got the diagnosis, the first feeling I felt was like a breath of fresh air. I was like, oh my God, I'm not crazy.
Finally, I know, yeah.
But I was convincing myself that I'm crazy, that I'm making it up. So I was like, okay, I'm not making it up. And the first month, 2 months, I was like, okay, whenever I'd be in pain, like, I'm not making this up. It's not in my head. Let's get through it. Let's fight it. Like, we have a reason. We're working on fixing it. And then slowly, I realized there isn't a cure. There isn't anything. I'm doing what I can do. I'm taking birth control. I'm altering my diet, and I'm planning to alter my diet even further now because there's links, and with that helping. But that's it. That's all they have for me. And it's something that you have forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in one of my appointments, the doctor told me, oh, well, when you get pregnant, it gets better. And I looked at him like this. I was like, dude, at the time I was 18. I was like, I'm 18. Like, I'm not getting pregnant anytime soon. Like, it felt like such a cop out. And it felt like he was laughing in my face to tell me that. So yeah, it can get better when you're pregnant. Some women, it gets worse. Some women opt for a hysterectomy when they're done having kids or if they can't take it anymore. I feel like these are such big question marks for me because I feel like at 19, normal 19-year-olds are figuring out, okay, do I want to have kids? Do I want to be career focused? Do I want to keep studying? Like, what's the plan? And all of a sudden I have this like thing looming over where I was told, for instance, you can't have kids after you're 30. So like you're already less fertile than the average woman. And by the time you're 30, it's like probably closed for business. Like, so think about it earlier. So my plan to have kids late, down the drain. If I want kids, which I do, I need to think about it sooner. And infertility and endometriosis go hand in hand. 50% of infertile women have endometriosis. So it's just such a, like, it felt like impending doom. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just waiting to see if I can have this and if it can happen for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned grief. So grief associated with illness or chronic illness. And I want to come back to you guys and see if you have anything to add on to that. I mean, I'm sure that there is some kind of level of grief, especially with you, Debbie. Like, you had just given birth. So you had just created life and you were possibly facing death. Like, that's quite a paradox.
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing that hits you at first is the fact that you feel that your body is letting you down.
Mm-hmm.
When you are so young and full of life and full of energy and with these big dreams, you know, you don't really think that at that age your body's going to let you down. So I think that's in itself very disappointing. And yes, I was probably grieving the life I had always dreamed of. But in reality, we don't really control our future. So realistically, it wasn't that I was losing something. At the same time, I had created life. I had given someone the opportunity to live. Had I not lived, my son would have been taken care of. I was still very happy to have had him. And having him and having experienced motherhood, be it very for a very short period of time at that time, it still was a fulfilling a dream for me. So at the same time, I was also grateful for what I had. I was grieving the idea I had in my head because in reality, I was imagining myself, you know, strolling with a pram and shopping all day and relax, being relaxed. And I had taken some time off from work. And then at the same time, I ended up in and out of hospitals and hospital appointments and trying to navigate through treatment and therapies and at the same time also taking care of my son full time. So it was surreal in a way. But at the same time, now I look back and it was still the best year of my life because I got to experience all of my son's firsts. I was with him all the time, obviously when I was not in hospital or getting treatment, but my experience also wasn't very treatment intensive. So I had one operation and then one dose of treatment. So one night in hospital for the treatment. So it wasn't really intensive from that point of view. Yes, but at the same time, there is that dynamic. But I also want to pick up on the fact that was mentioned before about the lack or delayed diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a real issue. And especially for us women, I think we tend to question ourselves even more. And I do feel that we have really strong instincts, but at the same time, when everyone around you is telling you it's not the case, you do feel like you're going crazy. You do feel like, okay, maybe I'm not understanding myself. I remember I had just given birth, so, you know, my hormones were all over the place. And at the same time, I remember at the time I was going to the breastfeeding clinic twice, three times a week. I was seeing doctors and post-gynecological appointments, and I always had my neck uncovered. And nobody realized. So I was really disappointed. I think the disappointment was very real because I was in a situation where, you know, all of those nurses, all of those doctors, everyone I visited, I felt like someone should have realized. Mm-hmm. This was not something internal where you don't really feel anything. This was, looking back now, even when I look at photos, you could see the lump on my neck. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, this was visible. Nobody, you know, I was at the breastfeeding clinic two, three times a week. Nobody realized or looked at me in that way or told me, listen, your neck is, you know, excessively swollen. Go check it out. Nobody. So when I got the diagnosis then, I felt like, okay, I realized you really need to be your own doctor. You really need to pay attention to your own body, what your body's telling you, how you're feeling, any small change. And doctors even will tell you this, that in reality, you are the best doctor for yourself. You are mm-hmm. best placed to diagnose yourself or realize that something's wrong. And I think we need to trust in ourselves more and keep mm-hmm. pushing and keep pushing. You said you felt relieved when you had the diagnosis. Of course you felt relieved because you were questioning yourself. But then when you have the diagnosis, you realize, okay, I wasn't going crazy. I was right mm-hmm. all along. You know, now mm-hmm. I can focus on getting better. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, our perseverance in trying to get to the bottom of it shows our strength, you know, but at the same time, the system should also support.
And I think the comment you just made about, oh, like you can focus on getting better, that's where I felt like I struggled the most because I was focusing on getting better when I found out. And then I was just kind of hit with this grief of, oh, but I'm not going to get better. There's going to be good days and there's going to be good cycles and there's going to be good months and there's going to be really bad ones. And it's just not like I got diagnosed, I got treatment, it's over. And I'm sure you can relate to this. It's for a long time, if not forever. And I feel like I grieve days, like looking back on my second year of university, as I go into my third one, I'm looking back on my second one and I'm like, oh my God, there were days where I just could not get out of bed. And I missed going to school and I missed my friends and I missed so much stuff. And I feel like chronic pain is a bit of a tipping scale between, do I fight? Do I push? Do I go? Or do I listen to my body and say, okay, today's a bad day. I need to be home. I need to take care of myself. Because if you go on one extreme and you push too far, you're going to burn yourself out. You're going to, and endometriosis is very linked with stress. So if you're stressed, you're having more frequent, more painful flare-ups. So you don't want to do that to yourself. But if you succumb to it and you're just, oh, I'm in a bit of pain. So I have endometriosis. I'm going to stay home. I'm going to self-pity, this like pit of despair, then you're on the other end of, you know, the tipping scale, and it's just bad. It's bad either way. So learning this middle ground and
finding the balance.
Yeah, finding the balance between, can I do this? Can I not do this? Should I listen to my body? But even having to learn this, I guess if I want to find a positive thing, I can say it teaches you to listen to yourself and it teaches you to say no to things if you don't think you can handle them. But I admire you guys for being in the stage of, oh, I can look back and see positive stuff because I'm really not there yet. I think about it and I get sad, I get angry, and I feel like it's so unfair. And it's
those are all valid emotions. Yes, like, don't exactly. feel like you need to be somewhere with this, you know?
Yeah. It's just hard. It's not a why me victim mindset. It's more a, it could have been so much easier if I found out sooner and if I got help sooner. It could have been so much easier. And even mentally, if I got that validation younger, because I feel like being denied that validation for so long also gave me some like mental issues where I don't listen to my pain and I don't listen to my body. And I say, okay, well, I'm too embarrassed to go get help. It's probably nothing. And I remember after my experience in the ER, I had another health issue and I was like stuck in between. Should I go? Should I not go? And I ended up not going because I said, if I go and they humiliate me like that again, I'm going to feel like crap. And I decided to stay home. I had another flare up and I decided to stay home. I got in the bath and I just like dealt with it on my own. And I realized it's so unfair that we're made to feel like we have to be ashamed mm-hmm. of seeking help because of this like negligence. And it's not a direct hit against ER doctors or anything, because they're seeing so much, they're so busy, so many people. And it's more the research, the lack of research, the lack of funding. It's this condition affects 190 million women worldwide. You'd think we'd have more by now. I mean, a study 2 years ago actually determined what endometriosis is, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. 2022, 2023, to find out what it actually is. They found out that it's not endometrial lining, it's something similar. So we don't even know exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we just deserve better. I really do.
Yeah. You were mentioning like listening to your body. When it came to my experience, I mean, I really relate to you because I was also 19 when I found out I had this massive ovarian cyst. It got massive because it was misdiagnosed for so long. And I can't tell you the amount of doctors, private doctors, I sat in front of consecutively, different ones, leading up to my diagnosis. And I would tell them, like, there's something seriously wrong with my stomach. And, like, one of the last ones I had gone to, he had actually laughed and he told me, no, it's just gas. Because things like ovarian cysts, endometriosis, they often get misdiagnosed for IBS.
Yeah.
So I have something to ask about this. Like, it's a matter of awareness, but it's also a matter of, like, what needs to change, both in the kind of, in the approach that doctors tend to take. I kind of see a pattern in the way young women are treated when it comes to acknowledging their health concerns. And I feel like you're taken more seriously if you're older. But if you're in your 20s or even younger, it's like there's this kind of idea that nothing that serious could possibly happen to you.
I think it's even when I first got sick with this and I first started experiencing this pain, even from women close to me, I was getting, oh, daksakem tidra, that's until you get used to it. It's normal. Periods are painful. You have to just get used to it. Other Xyra, you're still young. You have to get used to it. And I was like, wait, so everyone around me is going through their day-to-day lives feeling like this, like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I handle it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why is it so much harder for me? I must be so weak. I must be, like, my body must be failing me. And that's a feeling I experienced a lot is I cried to some of my loved ones about this when I found out. I said, what 19-year-old should be in this position? Like, you're supposed to be at your prime, you know? So it was just a pit of shame and doubt and just so many negative emotions linked that I'm slowly unwinding myself. But
I want to take it back to the grief that we were mentioning, and I want to hear from you about it, because so tell us a bit more. You are still living with cancer.
Yes.
And you will still continue to live with cancer, exactly. Right?
So as she mentioned as well, being young, I think it's actually worse. I mean, also keeping up with social media doesn't help. Seeing like people your age traveling, and I know it was during COVID, but you know, they are doing things that you want to be doing. And for example, since I'm very like into dance and whatsoever, I used to see like my teammates, they continue dancing and I couldn't. So, and I always longed for, and I still do, but I know I'm not going to hear it, which is also quite sad. Every appointment I used to go to, I used to hope that the oncologist tells me, listen, you're cancer free. I always longed to hear that like sentence. But obviously you'd have to like accept the fact that, listen, it's not going to happen. It's not the end of the world. That's how I think. It's not the end of the world. There are people who are going through things that are worse than mine. I always like to keep that in mind. I know mine is quite a load as well, but I always like to think of others. So yes, it's quite... You have loads of ups and downs in reality, because one day you'll wake up where you're like, I want to just stay in bed. But on other days, you're like, why am I going to stay in bed? What's the point? Why am I going to like waste another day and just like in bed when I can be like enjoying my time with my friends, my family? So you learn like...
Does it give you a sense of urgency? Like when you found out you had cancer, did you feel this urge to do stuff quickly so you make sure you manage?
For me, I think getting diagnosed with cancer made me realize that I cannot take things for granted. I cannot take people for granted. I need to like make sure I'm living in the moment. I used to suffer with, I still do, but I used to suffer with loads of panic attacks and anxiety, and I used to be scared of doing things. Which now, looking at it now, I don't think that much before I actually get to do something, because I'm like, why not? You know, I just want to do it. I'm going to give it a shot. I don't have time to waste, you know. So you look at it in that like way in reality. So yeah.
Do you feel like it has changed you? And I also want you to answer this, like.
Me personally, yes, it has changed me a lot. I was way different than I am now. I was a completely different person. I was still the shy and I am today. But it improved me and it helped me become the woman I am today. I'm much stronger. I look at things in a different way. And I try to be more positive as well. So yes, it did change me for the better as well.
I mean, you're absolutely inspiring. What about you?
I feel like I have always had a sense of urgency from a very young age. I was always the type to never really postpone anything. So whatever I wanted to do, I would just put my mind to it and just try to see it through. And I do feel it. I felt it before. I feel it now. I think I will always feel it. But yes, has it changed me? I think these types of experiences will always change you. I think you really learn more about yourself and more about life. One of the things that really, really stuck with me was the fact that when you're in such a situation, nobody can really solve the issue for you. Nobody can stay in hospital for you, take the treatment for you, go through the process or the grieving process with you. Nobody can give you that time back. So it's really, really life-changing from the point of view of the perspective you have of yourself and of your life, in the sense that, you know, the life's ups and downs, some things you can share with others, but when it's something on yourself, when you're sick, when your body is sick, you have to go through the process, you know, you have to be the one to put in the time and the effort, and you have to be the one to really soothe yourself and to see yourself through it. And I think it also gives you a sense of empowerment in a way, because you do feel stronger from that point of view. The fact that the importance of investing yourself, of not doubting yourself, the importance of knowing your body, knowing your emotions, knowing how you're feeling. You mentioned the fact that obviously you were disappointed with the long time it took to diagnose. But in reality, you know, we are women. We get told we get periods and they should feel this way, but you don't really know what other women are feeling. You don't really know what to expect. You don't really know what's normal, what's not normal. So I think when it comes to women's health, there's a lot of subjectivity. Even us as women, you know, we might have four completely different experiences. So because of that subjectivity, I think we're more prone to question ourselves. And also that in itself creates this situation of self-doubt. But that's why I feel it's important to really, really know your body and know yourself.
What you are just saying now about you being the one that has to go through it. I've said this before, like when I was going through the surgery, I was petrified of simply getting an injection, let alone the type of surgery that I ended up going through. But you described it in a really beautiful way. But what I want to ask is, it's also quite alienating, right? I mean, you can have the strongest support system around you, but you are still at the end of the day, you are still the only person who is going through this. And no one can pick that up for you.
Exactly. And you have to navigate through it. Mm-hmm. And no matter how much people tell you it's going to be okay and, you know, and that you're going to be fine and to think positive and just get on with it and just focus on getting better. And yes, at this, but at the same, it's important to have that type of support. But at the same time, you know, it's all on you. Mm-hmm. It's all on you. And I do feel that there were moments when I was, I remember after I had my treatment, when I had a scan, there were some traces left. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we didn't really know whether I would need another surgery, whether I would need more treatment. But then the treatment works over a period of time, so that in the end, it was okay. But I remember I was really panicked, and I didn't know how it was gonna end or what I would need to go through again. And I remember someone told me, "You're gonna get through this." They said, "It's going to be laborious. It might take longer than expected. It might not be the process you were imagining it was going to be, but you're strong and you'll get through it." And I think, you know, that gave me courage. Sometimes it's good for to hear it. Sometimes it's good for people to pin you down and say, "You're going to be okay." Mm-hmm. You know, it might not look like it's going to be okay when obviously you're diagnosed the first time, or when you're going through an operation or a treatment, you do feel like the world is going to end and it feels like you're never going to be better. You're never going to be back to yourself. But the reality is, I feel irrespective of whether it's a chronic situation or not, you it does get better, either because you make peace with it or because you adapt to it. Or because there is more treatment as you go along. So things change and you evolve. And I think it's also important to keep that in mind.
You're really our words of hope today. So after going through this though, especially you two, like, and as you're still going through it, like, did it change you in the way that you're anticipating the worst now? Do you fear worse things happening, that you've already gone through something so bad?
In my case, I think it was actually life-changing, because before I got sick, whenever I used to think about death, I always had this petrifying feeling. I would question myself, when the time comes, would I be happy with what I have done? Will I be satisfied? Will I feel anxious because I don't want to leave this world knowing that I haven't done whatever I wanted to do? And in reality, this experience made me realize that I was so at peace with myself. And I was at peace with myself at 27, 28 years of age. And since then, every day that has gone by has been a gift for me. Mm-hmm. I look at it as a gift. So I try to really focus on the things that make my life better. Is it always easy? Of course, it's not easy. You know, life will always be ups and downs. Mm-hmm. But I always feel that the people that have the biggest ups and the biggest downs have also a really full life. So looking at it from that point of view, I don't see just the negative. I try to see the glass half full all the time. Mm. Because life is like that, you know. You if we look at the way nature operates and how we live our lives, there's always ups and downs. I don't know if you ever feel like when you have a really big high, then you get a really big low. Mm-hmm. You know,
and so always.
Always, exactly. So, you know, that's nature's way also of balancing things out. And I think we tend to focus maybe sometimes more on the negatives, because obviously they impact you in such a life-changing way. But at the same time, through that negative comes positivity as well. You learn, you grow, you change as a person, you try to achieve different things. Maybe you change your mind. I mean, when I look back at the person I was before, I was for sure much more judgmental of myself, of others. I felt like I had these big moral grounds, etc. Whereas now I'm so much more chill. You know, I do my own thing. I believe in what I believe in. I try to be a good person. I do voluntary work as much as I can. I try to do philanthropy as much as I can. I try to instill a positive sentiment in those around me. And yes, this has been my journey. And I think everyone should be encouraged and inspired to go through the process, no matter how hard it is. I don't want to minimize, because some people have had it really, really much worse than I have had it thus far. So I don't want to minimize what people go through, because I know people who have had much more serious issues, or they deal with chronic pain on a daily basis, which is debilitating. So I don't want to minimize other people's pain. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, you try to look for the silver lining at the end of the day. You know, no matter how hard it is, you're a valid person. Your experiences are valid. How you feel is valid. If you have a bad day and want to stay in bed, it's fine to have a bad day and stay in bed. Mm-hmm. I have my moments as well, you know. So, but then on the good days, I'd really try to mm-hmm. make an effort and maximize and try to be happy also with the small things. I think today, perhaps we also with social media, we have so many expectations of how our lives should look like. You know, we should be at the best places all the time and look our best all the time and, you know, be smiling all the time and have happy and healthy relationships all the time. But that's not life. That's not real life. And it's good to be aware that there are challenges and everyone's going to go through challenges. And it's more a question of how you navigate through rather than how big the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my case, doing a PET scan and going to see the oncologist after the PET scan is always like a nightmare, because you're always waiting for another something to occur and something to happen. So, it does make me feel scared. I'm not going to lie. However, I always tend to try and keep in mind that there is treatment if something else is going to come up or my kind of cancer is going to get worse. So there is treatment I can take for it. So that calms me down. So I try to put these things in my head and like focus on the positive things and calm myself down with them. So, but yes, it does get scary. I mean, every appointment, every hospital appointment, it's like you're going into that corridor of like death.
I want to turn to you. I want to hear, like, what do you wish more people knew about endometriosis? Like, what is your message? Like, not just for young women who might be going through it, but also young women who might not be diagnosed yet, or even healthcare professionals, because you mentioned that you felt laughed at, you felt ridiculed, you know, when it's something that you were dealing with on a daily basis, it was shaping your life. So what do you wish more people knew about this?
I think the first message I want to really make clear that I had a misconception about as well is endometriosis equals bad periods. Endometriosis is not a bad period. It is an inflammatory disease. Your body is literally creating endometrium-like growths that are growing in the wrong place. That's not a bad period at all. It has nothing, as in not nothing to do with your period, but it happens in isolation to your period. So this idea that endometriosis is just bad period cramps, it's not. And when I first heard the word, that's what I thought it was. I thought it was just really bad periods and you were dealt a shit card and you're just like...
deal with it.
Yeah, deal with it. Like, you're one of the unlucky ones, you know? But no, that's not what it is. I really empathize with people who are still going through the diagnosis process and with anyone who has it. And I think for everyone, if you know someone in your life, not with just endometriosis, but chronic pain, just give them space to step back sometimes. Sometimes you really can't handle life and you need to just wallow and you need to just be in pain and you need to, you accept that there's very little you can do. Like, yes, I take painkillers, but you know, they don't help very much. So if you have a friend who has chronic pain, empathy, and if they cancel plans last minute or if they pull out of an important event, they don't want to do that. It makes them feel really bad. But sometimes they just have to. So that's definitely a big one. And for anyone who's in healthcare, I know it might be annoying to have someone in front of you who has a problem you cannot fix, but it is a problem that they have to deal with every day. So if it's annoying for you for that 15, 20 minutes that they're in front of you, imagine how life-altering, annoying, painful it is for them to wake up and go to sleep with it every single day. I get it. It's frustrating not being able to fix something. But, you know, you go to these people because you're supposed to feel safe and heard. And just doesn't happen sometimes. So I'm really grateful that at the end I did get that, and I did get people who understood and listened. For anyone who's still trying to get diagnosed, just keep advocating for yourself, because if you don't, no one will for you. This isn't one of the things that people see or find out and say, okay, let me get you care right now. Mm-hmm. It's something you have to fight for, because the second you're not vocalizing how in pain you are, you're invisible. So
and trust your instincts, as you've already said.
Keep advocating for yourself.
It's really something I live by, because if I trusted mine, I mean, I did trust mine, but if I maybe pushed a bit harder, you know, things wouldn't have gotten so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So really, like, you touched upon it as well. Women tend to have this innate wisdom, you know, and I think we should be encouraged to listen to it more. And for you, what would you say is the most important message to get out?
I think not giving up is my main, like, message. And to stay strong always, in all aspects in life, in reality. But when it comes to these kind of health issues, you will feel alone. You will feel like you will have days like where you'll say, why me? Why this young? Why can I not be like my friends? Why can I not go there and not think about my health issues, for example? So yes, it does get bad, but it's how positively you look at it,
mm-hmm.
if I must say. I think also what one must do is to speak up. Like, if you're feeling down, find a friend, speak to a friend, let them know how you're feeling, find support. Support helps a lot. I was very lucky that I found lots of support from my family, from my friends. And I do believe it helps a lot, and it helps you, like, to keep moving forward. I do feel like I'm a burden to them sometimes because of my health issues, but they do reassure me that I'm not. So that really helps. 'Cause, you know, having someone you constantly worry about, it's not something that you'd really want. I'm the kind of person that I wouldn't want anyone to worry about me, because
mm-hmm.
I worry about others, but I don't want anyone to worry about me, you know? So yes, I mean, speak up and stay strong always.
Yes, you touched upon a very sensitive point here, because my father passed away last year, and he never knew that I had this issue, so I never told him.
Wow.
And I never told him, because I didn't want to give him that pain.
Mm-hmm.
We had a really, really strong relationship. When my sisters will see this, they will cry. we had so much love for each other. He was an amazing person in our life. And I feel less loved with him around. Yes, so I didn't want to give him that pain. I would much rather go through the process without his support, knowing he would have supported me, but I didn't want to give him that pain. And probably that's why I feel comfortable being here today, because he's not here anymore. So I feel like it's something I can talk about more freely, because I think it's a very personal choice as well, you know. So the people that might be listening to us or watching this, you know, some of them might feel comfortable talking about their situation. Some of them wouldn't. There's no right or wrong situation here. I think it's a question of personality. It's a question of timing. You know, probably I would not have been so comfortable talking about my situation when I was going through the whole process at the very beginning. But also because I had different priorities. I just wanted to be better. I just wanted to deal with the situation. So I think people should also respect their own. You shouldn't feel less just because you're taking a different route or making a different choice.
Mm-hmm.
People should really go along with what they're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would also be my message. Reach out, but also focus on what really makes you feel good.
I mean, when I first found out, I told no one. I was like, I don't, as in my mom knew, people close to me knew, but I didn't want it to be this thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to keep it as down low as possible, for many reasons. For one hand, I didn't want to make it an excuse for myself, but also I just felt weird. Like, I felt like if I talked about it, it became real. And why I decided to do this and why I decided to actually start speaking up about it is because I felt so alone when I found out, and I looked online and there is resources, there is through like social media now, women sharing their story, but I felt like it was very either short form content or very like fear mongering sort of content where you're just hearing these horror stories and, you know. So I decided to do this because it was a bit intimidating, a bit awkward for me in the beginning, but I'm very proud of us for speaking up because we are what someone might need.
Exactly.
And I am what I needed 4 months ago, right now. If I had heard a podcast like this, I think I would have felt so much more comfortable with the whole thing. So,
I mean, it's very brave of all of you that we're all here together. And this is something that I believe in personally. And it was one of the reasons why I initially came to the She Word as a guest with Trudy to talk about my experience, because I felt so alone when I was going through it. And I thought, if I speak about it and people going through this listen to this, they're going to feel less alone. So by talking about our experiences as women, we're immediately contributing to just a more supportive society, because support tends to be more in a closed circle, and like this, we're making it bigger. So one of the last questions I want to ask, and I just want to throw it in the table and you can have a go at it. We've already kind of touched upon it, but I want to see if there's something concrete. If there's anything positive that you can take from this, what would it be?
I think from my end, I did mention it already, to actually enjoy the moment and not take anything and anyone for granted, because in reality, you'd never know when someone is taken away from you, or if that someone has something or anything in reality. Just enjoy the moment, enjoy whatever you're doing. Just think less, do more, I think.
Good one.
Yes, I think that's my main thing I think about.
I think there's some things that I probably wouldn't have done had I not gone through the experience. So after I got sick, then I really tried to focus to have much more quality time with my son. And I stayed at home longer and I extended my maternity leave, my parental leave. So probably those were all decisions that kind of were triggered by the fact that I wanted to really value the important things in my life. But also I've done other smaller things that perhaps I wouldn't have done. Like, for example, since my son's first birthday, I have created an email account for him, and I have been sending him emails, hundreds of them. He's almost 9 years old now, and I would describe myself at that age, a person he would not necessarily meet, in the sense that he would be probably too young to remember. So I would describe myself and how we're together, and I would describe him at such a young age, and I still do it now. So it's something that probably had I not gone through the experience, I would have never started. But now I'm really grateful that I have. I think it's also the small things that kind of soothe you, and that like give you this sense of, okay, I'm trying to be productive even if the situation is what it is. And I think that's also something that I take back from this situation, the importance of, you know, really focusing on what you really value in life and trying to give importance to that.
When we were discussing this same topic outside, I said, well, I don't have anything positive yet, I'm not there yet. But through this conversation, I actually feel like there are good things that did come out of this, and it's my ability to empathize more with people who are in pain and people who are still figuring out what's up with them, which I was always quite an empathetic person, but this definitely heightened that sense more. And it might not be something just for me, but I also really appreciate the bond, even just as in an hour and a half that we managed to form.
Being here is quite inspiring. Yeah?
Something like this, which I never would have had if I didn't get diagnosed with this and have this in the very first place. So I guess, yes, there's a silver lining. I am still working on concrete answers to this. I feel like being so young when I found out, it's just very confusing mm-hmm. and a bit life-altering because, you know, I definitely wanted children. Now that's a question mark. If it's going to happen, when it's going to happen. Some days I just can't go to uni like everybody else and I have to leave early or go late. So it's just these little things that build up. Mm-hmm. But there's a strong sense of community, I think, right now and in general. And I would have been a part of that if this never happened. So
beautiful. Yeah. That's absolutely beautiful. So we're closing off with your final words of wisdom. So if there was any word of advice that you could give young women who might be experiencing something similar, what would it be?
I think I would like tell them to open up as much as they can. And if they don't want to, maybe find peace within yourself or maybe try to reach out to a friend that you really trust or a relative. I think speaking about a health issue or a problem, whatever, it really helps rather than just dealing with it on your own. For me, for example, it helped a lot. I actually made it public myself. I wanted to raise awareness. So yes, I think that would be my main words of wisdom. Like, try to open up as much as you can, and it's okay to have bad days. You will get through them, and yeah, stay positive always.
Yeah, I second that. I feel reaching out is very important. Like when you feel like you need the support mm-hmm. and you, I think it's very important to reach out. I also feel like when you feel healthy enough and when you feel good enough, instead of focusing on the problem and mm-hmm. the issues you're going through, I would just say go out and live your life.
Yes.
You know, don't spend time, waste time thinking about the problem. The problem is there. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. If it's something you can get through, you'll go through the process, you'll do what's necessary. If it's something you live with, you'll probably adapt. And hopefully there will be treatment as you go along. But in the meantime, don't waste time. Mm-hmm. Don't waste time thinking about the problem, overthinking about the problem. It's much more valuable to just go out and live your life.
Mm-hmm. I guess my biggest one is you are worth getting better. Mm. So you are worth the time spent in the doctor's office, you are worth the medicine that's given to you, you are worth help. So seek it out. And something that brings me a lot of comfort is medicine is amazing, science is amazing. In 10, 15 years, maybe there will be a cure or a way to minimize the suffering. So just hope and don't lean into the impending doom of this is a life sentence that I was just given. But yeah, definitely seek help and advocate for yourself because you deserve it.
Yeah. Honestly, thank you all so much for being here with me today and for making this conversation such a powerful one and being so open about your experiences. As I mentioned before, it really does take a lot of courage to speak openly about such experiences. So I really want to thank you all.
Thank you.
I'm so inspired. Thank you. These conversations are just so important to have, and I hope that the audience takes away as much from the discussion as much as I have. Until next time, keep the conversation going on the She Word Community Facebook group, and don't forget to like on Facebook, follow on Instagram, and subscribe on YouTube. And thank you for joining us here today.